Good afternoon, members and the public. Welcome to the Transportation and Finance and Policy Committee. Today is, what is it, 18th? March 18th, 2026. First order on the agenda is to approve the minutes for March 17th. Representative Tabke or somebody would like to review the minutes and move to approve the minutes of Tuesday, March 17th, 2026.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of approving the minutes of Tuesday, March 17th, 2026, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are adopted. We have a number of bills on the agenda, like always. Try to get organized here. First off, we'll start with a couple of representative. Is Representative Durand here? Oh, Representative Olson, you're all ready to go in the chair. I didn't see that.
I'm ready, Mr. Chair.
A little presumptuous of the.
Well, I stand ready to leave the seat anytime you tell me to.
We appreciate your efficiency today. We will start with House File 3749. Okay, he's got two. House File 3169, do you want to move that bill? Tell us what it's about. We've got a couple testifiers. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3169 is a bill that would set requirements for a study on barriers for suicide prevention on bridges. So the previous bill had a substantial fiscal note. The interested parties, we've had a conversation with the Department of Transportation, and we've come up with a way in which we can make this happen for zero cost. So we'll be saving people's lives by preventing their ability to commit suicide on MnDOT property or bridges and infrastructure. And I think that's an altogether a really wonderful thing. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we can take the DE amendment.
The Representative Olson offers the DE1 amendment. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye. Or any discussion? He explained it. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. You have two testifiers.
And one
online. We have, trying to remember. Mr. Mishy. And Ms. Weiss-Blair, and then online we'll go to Ms. Morello. Welcome to the committee. You've been here before. Thank you for your work. Please introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My remarks will be brief. My name is Eric Mishy. I'm the CEO of SAVE, Suicide Awareness Voices of Education. We are a 36-year-old Minnesota-based national suicide prevention nonprofit. First, I want to say thank you to Representative Olson for carrying this bill forward and the amendment, as well as the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and particularly Melissa Schultz, who has worked very hard and collaboratively with us and others to put together this public policy. We wholeheartedly endorse this policy. It will, for the first time, put in statute the requirements that we integrate best practices, pedestrian safety, and suicide prevention measures on public bridges in the state of Minnesota. This is an extraordinary opportunity to save lives. I want to thank you for your support and your work in the Washington Avenue Bridge last year, and this is a continuation of that kind of policy so that it is a full-blown policy across the state rather than a one-off project time and time again. So on behalf of SAVE, thank you, and we support this unconditionally.
Thank you, sir. Next, we'll go to Ms. MJ Weiss-Blair.
Hi, I'm MJ Weiss-Blair. I am Kayla's mom. Chair Kosnick and members of this committee, thank you for allowing me this opportunity to testify. The passage of this bill is profoundly important to me because it addresses a preventable public health crisis that has touched my life in ways that are difficult to put into words. When a bridge becomes the site of a tragedy, it doesn't end with a statistic. It ripples outward through families, friends, first responders, and communities. These losses are not abstract. They are deeply human, deeply painful, and deeply permanent. What makes this bill so meaningful is that it transforms that pain into action. It acknowledges that infrastructure is not just concrete and steel. It is part of the environment people move through during their most vulnerable moments. By requiring consistent data collection, clear criteria, and evidence-based safety measures, this bill ensures that Minnesotans respond to these tragedies with compassion, responsibility, and foresight. Minnesotans deserve that level of care. Suicide barriers work. They interrupt suicidal ideation. They give others the chance to intervene. They save lives. I believe in hope and believe that this state legislative group can rise up to support the needs of our state and pass House File 3169. Hope starts here. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here and your testimony. We'll go to our online testifier, Ms. Morello.
Morello, yes. Thank you, Chair Kosnick and members of the committee. I'm Trish Morello. I'm speaking to you remotely because I'm out of state. I actually work with the folks before you in a couple of capacities. I'm co-founder of the Coalition for Suicide Prevention and Public Infrastructure, CSPPI, an advocacy group formed with MJ Weiss Blair and the group from SAVE. As mothers who both lost children to suicide at Bridges, it was natural as we got to know each other to team up and try to do work on a broader scale. We're not alone. There are many family members all over this country trying to prevent further suicides at public structures where their loved ones were lost. Our work with CSPPI focuses on bringing these groups together to work to change policy. We're currently building support on the federal level as well for the Barriers to Suicide Act, a bipartisan bill introduced in the House aiming to reduce suicides at high-risk structures like bridges, buildings, in rail stations. My son John was just 17 when he died by suicide at the Natchez Trace Parkway Bridge inside a national park near Nashville, Tennessee. Middle of his senior year of high school, a darling, gifted student, just a beautiful boy who just also happened to suffer from severe depression. We soon found out that many people die by suicide at this bridge, that the community at large was relatively unaware, and that nothing was being done about it. So I and others in the community rallied, and with the help of the local community, with local media, with the state and federal legislature, we were successful in getting a barrier put up on the Natchez Trace Bridge. That went up in 2022, and I am thrilled to report to you that it has been extremely effective. When someone is in a suicidal crisis, their best ally is time. Any few extra seconds or minutes or hours, just something to let that darkness lift just a little, can mean the difference between life and death. We so often talk about why someone died by suicide, but rarely how did they die by suicide. So in supporting House File 3169, I applaud you if you do. The state of Minnesota would be at the forefront of a growing proactive approach by state agencies to treat bridge safety as a public health issue and not just a structural one. So thank you for your time. Thank you to Representative Olson for introducing the bill. It's an honor to get a few minutes before you here today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any member questions, discussion? Seeing none, I appreciate what the bill does. Representative Olson, do you want to wrap up your bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee for the consideration of this bill that, although spending no money, will have actual measurable results. Thank you.
Would you like to renew your motion?
I would renew my motion.
Representative renews his motion to move House File 3169 as amended to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is going to the General Register. I would like to note for the record that there is a quorum is present. And the next on the agenda is House File 3749, Representative Olson, basically a MnDOT policy bill. There we go. Ms. Witt, Legislative Affairs Manager for the Department of Transportation, will be testifying with Representative Olson. Please move and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 3749. This is the Department of Transportation's Agency Policy Provisions Bill. It's got a lot of different information in it, including modifications to bridge inspections and establishment of vehicle tunnel inspection standards. A lot of the really, really exciting stuff that we love to talk about here in committee. I have a testifier here, and we can get really down deep into it if we want, but I think that we're all in good shape and capable of handling this.
Great. Thanks for that introduction. Ms. Witt, if you'd like to make some comments, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, members, Chair and members. My name is Jennifer Witt. I'm with the Department, Minnesota Department of Transportation, and this bill is one of two that we have. First of all, thank you for hearing this bill. Thank you for carrying it, and I'll just get right to it. So the first part of the bill is to update our bridge statute. And 165 is all of our bridge statute. And the federal government has updated their bridge statutes and tunnels. And so we want to conform to their standards. And so this will bring in tunnels because we don't have any statute language on tunnels, of which we have, I believe, about six. I can't see my engineer, but yes, about six tunnels in the state. And so that's what this piece is. The next piece is the modernization of our legislatively mandated reports. So we have several legislatively mandated reports at MnDOT, and it costs us about $1 million a year in staff time, in printing, in writing these all up, in collecting the data for these reports. And so we want to put a 10-year time limit on them. And most of this information we could put online if that's what you would prefer. We would work with you. But some of them are just getting old, and they're in perpetuity, in statute in perpetuity, and it's time to update them or get rid of them. So that's the second one. And then the third one is to authorize MnDOT to enter into public-private partnerships, or P3s. MnDOT did a study on truck parking, and there's an obvious shortage. And so this would be so that we could actually start to engage with private businesses and privately owned landowners to try to get more truck parking. We don't know what that looks like yet. I mean, we have a couple of examples that we will probably go with or try at first, but that's what this is about, is to help drivers who have to, you know, log their hours and rest for certain periods of time, have some place to do that and be safe on our roads when they're driving. The next one is for our active transportation program, and this is for safety education. And the current law stands at, for the first, the first part of the funding, $500,000 of that funding has to go to education, and it's split out in specific education pieces. And so we want to change that to 10% because we have pretty much done most of the education part, and it isn't going to cost that much. And so this would get the money back to, you know, those entities or those people that need it. Last one is to remove four scenic byways from our statutes. You know, we have in our designations in 161, 0.14, we have four scenic byways. They will still remain scenic byways. That doesn't change their position with that. But we need to remove them. We need to clean up these statutes. There's a lot of things within 161.14 that shouldn't be there. So we would remove these four and give them to the Minnesota Scenic Byway Commission, and they would sign for them because we can't sign for them due to 161.139, which says we can't use trunk highway funds to pay for signs. So that's the bill.
Excellent. Thank you for walking through that with us. There are one, two, three, four, five amendments. We'll start with the A1. I will offer the A1 amendment. The A1 amendment deals with the major highway projects. There is another policy bill from the department that talks about major projects, major highway projects. There's a list of reports, and they'd like to increase the amount of the threshold for not having to do as many reports. And so we're adding this in here and suggesting a dollar amount of $100 million for Metropolitan Highway Construction Districts, and then $50 million for non-metro highway districts. And that is the amendment. Any?
Kraft.
Representative Kraft has a question. Go ahead.
I don't have a question. I have a comment on it. Do you want to go to them first? Or?
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I should applaud you. Congratulations. This is a rather clever way of trying to get around the greenhouse gas emission VMT thing. But shouldn't be in this bill. We've talked about that before. So this is a absolute no. Thank you.
Any comments from the author or the testifier?
I'm good with it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, 1 second.
I'm good with it. Okay. I'll take it.
Representative Kraft asked for a roll call. Roll call has been requested and granted. Any other member discussion? Seeing none. Please take the roll.
Chair Kosnick.
Aye.
Chair Tapke.
No.
Vice Chair Myers. Vice Chair Ream.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Fogelman.
Yes.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Jones.
No.
Representative Joy.
Yes.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Kraft.
No.
Representative Luger-Nicolai.
No.
Representative Murphy. Representative Olson.
Yes.
Representative Sensor-Mura.
No.
Representative Scraba.
Yes. There being 8 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have Representative Olson. You had an A2 technical amendment. I guess we probably should have led off with that. You or your testifier just briefly to describe the technical amendment?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
So this amendment, Chair and members, simply changes. We had the bridge inspection quality assurance report repealed twice, and so it just chooses one place to have it.
Great. Any member discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next, we'll go to the A3 amendment. Representative Cagle, please introduce your amendment. Describe it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this amendment actually reinstates the reporting. We actually added a lot of the reporting last year, especially around metro counties, seeing how they're using the funds that we're sending to them. I also think that without thorough reporting, it's kind of rife for unsightly behavior. We want to make sure that the legislature has oversight of this and can see exactly where the money is coming from and where it is going. This has been something that I've been talking about since I've been here, the transparency in the system. Last year when we came with these reports that we were asking for, we also had asked about consolidating reports, finding other ways that we can report them, and didn't get any input that was needed. And so I understand that there's a lot of old reports, but some of them, like the ones that the consolidated local transportation finance report, transportation systems report, the taxpayer transportation accountability report, these things are important. I agree, they cost a lot and they take a lot of time, but getting rid of them I don't think is the right answer. I think we need to look at how the information we need and how it is best absorbed. But until we come up with that plan, I don't want to remove any reporting.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. All those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chair,
I didn't see any other members on the roll. Do you have some comment?
Oh, I was waiting for
your Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say that the removal of those reports or the addition of an expiration date on those reports is my brainchild, my baby. Ms. Witt and I worked on that, and it means a lot to me to have these expire because they're not necessary. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would say no, please.
Any other Representative Cagle?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be inclined to say that, yes, we should let these reports expire, but we also have to have a plan in place on how we're going to be collecting that information and how that information is going to be disseminated to the legislature. And so I just have a real concern with having those expiration dates in legislation. I'm not going to be here next year, so I'm kind of protective over the reports, and I don't want to see them go away. I want to see them go away. I want to see them used better, the information presented better, and what we need so that we can actually see everything. And so until a plan is in place, we should not let it expire. Sorry, that was watering.
Okay. Any other members? Go ahead, Co-Chair Hapke.
Thank you very much, Chair Kosnick. So with these reports, just can I get a better understanding of what exactly there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like what all these reports encompass and talk about what they are, if we could, please.
Chair, Representative Tabke, it's the Corridors of Commerce report, the dedicated funds report, which in my legislation we drafted so that reports we do with other agencies, which this is because we do this in collaboration with DPS, that one would not expire. The Taxpayers Transportation Accountability Act, TTAA, the bridge inspection piece, because we are changing, we're hoping to change those bridge inspection requirements or our standards as well. The trunk highway performance report, consolidated local report, which is a new one. It encompasses a lot of agencies, and it's gathering tons of information from those agencies. They have to send it in, and we have to make this report. I don't know that we put it online. Not yet, but it's a hard one to do because you have a lot of people you have to work with and get them to buy into giving you this data. The annual transit report and the major highways project reports and complete streets.
Thank you, Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Chair Kosnick. Like, I agree with you, there's too much reporting on some things, but I do have a problem with removing some of these and making sure that those aren't moving forward from there. So I understand where that's at and would like to continue working on this so that we have a list that is more acceptable from both sides. So I would appreciate if this amendment could go on so we can continue to talk about this and figure out how we can move this forward.
Representative Olson, if you have change of heart or anything, but I understand that the bill does not have the support to pass out of committee, so we're just laying it over so you will be able to continue to work on it. Do you have any other comments? Any other members? All those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye. Signify by saying aye, sorry.
Aye. No.
No.
All those opposed?
No.
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 The bill, the amendment does not pass.
Yes. A bipartisan failure.
All right, what's the next amendment here? The next amendment is the A5, Representative Jones. And just to clarify for the record, the A3 amendment did not pass. Representative Jones, you're online. If you can hear us, please proceed with introducing your A5 amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this amendment I need to move my amendment first.
Your amendment is moved.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment basically strips out the additions that have been made regarding the active transportation education. I have severe concerns around why MnDOT would not have spent all this money. The purpose of putting that amount of money into education is to actually provide more robust education around active transportation. So I would urge members' support so that we can actually do full active transportation education across the state.
Thank you, Representative Jones. Representative Olson or Ms. Witt, any comments?
I would please ask the committee to just leave the bill as it is, as we've got it. Well, I guess there's one more amendment we're looking at, but this one I think we should discuss further later and not take it to the bill this time.
No. Ms. Witt, does the department have any comments?
Just that our bill without this amendment would require us to spend $265,000 like this year. That's what we sort of are at. And I mean, we have a website, we have several, you know, pieces of information for all these things, and you know, that's a lot of money.
Okay, any committee member questions, comments? Representative Joan moves the A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Representative Cagle has the A6 amendment. Representative Cagle, please discuss and introduce your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the resilient pavement program that we had heard last year and had included in the bill last year. It doesn't have any funding. It just establishes the program. And so, again, this is, you know, best bang for your buck type of thing. And so I'm hoping it will be viewed as a friendly.
To the author or any other committee members?
Absolutely. I think this is a great amendment. I appreciate the amendment being brought forward.
Any other committee members? All those in favor of the Cagle A6 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Please, any other final member discussions? Otherwise, please renew your motion to lay the bill over.
I move to lay the bill over for possible inclusion.
Representative Olson moves to lay the bill over. It is laid over. Next, Representative Olson Day in Transportation, House File 2605, Driver and Vehicle Services, Full Service Provider Account. This bill is being laid over. We ask the testifiers to please keep your comments. Please, we have a lot on the agenda still, to a minute and a half. We heard you last week and understand this, but welcome to the committee, Representative Olson. Do you want to make any opening comments or just go to the testifier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a bill for our deputy registrars here in the state and reallocating some of the funds to ensure that they have the ability to continue the services that they're providing our state.
All right. Mr. Hurst, do you want to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Please abide by the time.
Thank you, Representative Olson, for sponsoring this legislation. Real briefly, Jim Hurst on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. We've also submitted for your review a letter pertaining to this topic, so my comments can be even more brief for you. But in general, keep in mind, deputy registrars have been around for over 70 years. We constitute about 169 offices currently statewide, of which 66 are county-run, 33 are city-run, and 70 are done by private entities. They're all equal in our eyes, and they are all important to do the work that citizens rely upon them to complete their registration needs throughout the state. Deputies have always been historically funded by a filing fee, which is set in statute. However, because of the last 20 years of the encroachment of mail-in and online transactions, which are controlled by DVS, our partner, we've seen huge losses in our facilities, and this will only continue without something like revenue sharing. Revenue sharing was something that was recommended by the King report that was done in the after the fiasco of Minlars, which we are still trying to come back from. But keep in mind this, I want to leave this with you. Currently, we think that we believe there's about 50% of all tab renewals are done through directly to the state. Given the fact there's 6 million vehicles roughly in the state of Minnesota, 50% of that is 3 million vehicles. That translates to $24 million in lost filing fee revenue for these offices. That's unacceptable for us. What this tries to do is at least claw back half of that from the department. In closing, I encourage you to read the recommendation from the King report. Please review our letter. Our offices are in each and every legislative district. I encourage you all to visit your local
deputy. Thank you, Mr. Hurst.
Thank you.
Let's move to our next testifier. Are you Mr. O'Reilly or Mr. Hintz?
Mr. Hintz.
Mr. Hintz, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself. You got a minute and a half.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. My name is Mike Hintz. My wife and I, Molly, have three deputy registrar offices in the Rochester area. I understand the future of many things is being done online. The COVID pandemic basically accelerated the move to providing services online into warp speed. There are many things that can and should be done online. Renewing your tabs may be one of them. But what happens when the customer gets married and needs to change their name? What if a spouse died and the family wants to sell the car? What if it's an ugly divorce and the ex doesn't want to give you the title to the car? A chatbot cannot help you find the conveyance language in your divorce decree. These are everyday real questions that come into our offices. These situations require deputy registrar offices, offices with clerks who are familiar with the very complex world of motor vehicle statutes and driver's license requirements. Deputy registrars have always sustained themselves using only the filing fees retained by the office. Every session we come before the legislature asking to raise those fees to help us keep up. We have gotten some relief in the past, but it has not kept up. The legislature has in the past several years required studies to be completed by independent agencies. Both the King report and the Barry Dunn report specifically called out the likely need for revenue sharing in the future. Returning some of these fees to the deputies will allow offices to remain open, hire and retain good staff, and continue to provide the in-person service that our customers and your constituents require. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the comments and staying on time. Next, we have Mr. O'Reilly. Thank you. Sorry, the microphone wasn't on. Thank you, sir. Mr. O'Reilly, please introduce yourself and proceed. Minute and a half.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick and members of the committee. My name is Jared O'Reilly, and I began working at a deputy registrar office back in 2011. I now own five offices with my brother, Ben. I would just like to add a few things to what Mike was saying about why fee sharing among all deputies, not just the full service ones, is crucial to our survival. First off, back in 2017, the workload was shifted from the back office at the state to the front counters with the implementation of MinLARS and now MinDrive. These systems have made it so we spend more time with each customer because we are entering the data up front, so the records can be updated in real time. This is great for everyone, but it delays us from getting to that next customer, and we rely on quantity to be able to afford our everyday business expenses. Next thing I'd like to mention is that the state offers training 2 days a month to keep us up to date with the statutes and business processes that we need to be up to date with, but we can't afford to pull staff away from the counter to have them attend these trainings because most deputies run thin on staff because we don't have the money to afford the extra payroll. We need fee sharing to help us increase our staff so we are able to afford more employees to be pulled from the counter to take these necessary trainings. Furthermore, because we lost a great percentage of the quick and simple transactions to people going online or mailing them in, it can be challenging to find new employees for our line of work because we aren't able to offer the greatest starting wages and benefits. But with the fee sharing, we would be able to, and this would make working at a DMV more appealing to people. We are referred to as a business partner with the state, so in my opinion, we should be included in the sharing of revenue on those online and mail-in transactions so we can continue to better our in-person public information centers, as I like to call them. I would just like to stress again that any fee sharing in the future should include all deputies, not just the full service providers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. O'Reilly. You took the leftover time of Mr. Hintz, but thank you. Representative Kraft, I believe we have a question. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, just to make sure I question understand something. I get the revenue sharing, but are we also saying that we're going to charge people more to mail in an application than to do something in person. There's like a $5 surcharge. Did I misunderstand that?
Where are you seeing that?
Paragraph H creates a new $5 surcharge.
And the director, if you want to come up, I missed your.
Yeah.
The director will testify. Thank you to the other testifiers. Representative Olson, why don't you take a look at see if you can find that. And Mr. Pongjong, please proceed with your testimony. Thank you. Sorry, I missed you earlier.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Pongjong, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. The department would just like to share some concerns about fee sharing. DVS recognizes that the deputy registrars and our deputy offices are a critical part of our ecosystem. We support compensating the offices for the work that they do. And last session, we brought forward the no-fee transactions where we are able to identify which transactions offices are conducting where they do not collect a filing fee, and we're able to provide them a fee that passed. And we have been making those payments over the last two quarters. Our concern is that we want to make sure that offices are being compensated for the work that they actually do, and the entirety of this process, both mail-in and virtual, that entire process is managed by the state. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have follow-up, or did you find?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Found that section. More than happy to have more of a conversation on that, because I think that's a good point out that you've made. When we're talking about all this, though, the question is, can the state handle it all? And if they can, maybe we just get rid of these deputy registrars entirely, but I don't think that's going to work. What I think is that if you want your property taxes to pay for these things, then you can just continue to throttle back and choke these deputy registrars off. There's a lot of counties that are supplementing their deputy registrars with their county property taxpayer dollars. And there's a conversation about how transportation funds should fund transportation, and this is one of the ways we can do that. So happy to continue that conversation. Mr. Chair, there is an amendment that would just change some of the dates and make it updated to this year. If we could take that, and then we can move on, I think.
See that on my notes here.
I do have a follow-up when we get there.
Members, we're just going to lay the bill over. But you still want to offer the amendment?
If we're going to lay it over, that's fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Kraft, you had a follow-up, and then Representative Cagle, and then we're going to lay the bill over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, my comment is not about the revenue sharing and all that. It's just, as I read it in line 38 to 311, it says we're sending the message that if you mail it in, we're going to charge you more than if you go in person, and that logically doesn't make sense to me. If you want to do revenue sharing and raise fees and propose that way, but I think the message of sending to someone, look, we're going to charge you more to mail it in when there should be less you actually have to do, feels off.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, this isn't to this specific bill. It's just kind of to the system. And I completely agree with you that public services should be administered by public employees. I don't think it's really kind of our job to be supporting some of these small businesses or some of these private businesses, because it's not really a business that's fair to them. You know, they can't set their own prices. And so, you know, I really believe that these public services should be administered by public entities, and that the state should be the one to administer DVS services. With that, then we would be able to remove a lot of the fees and hopefully make it a more streamlined system. I think the counties would probably be really happy to be off the hook for some of these services too if it was just straight DVS. I think it would really kind of cut down on some of the overhead and administrative burden as well. So, you know, I hope that's something that you do work on in the future. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. Representative Tapke, Chair Tapke. Appreciate bringing the bill forward. Chair Tapke did have some comments on some of the other bills that we had earlier in committee. This is kind of an ongoing a little bit of debate that we have in transportation and the roles of the deputy registrars. I appreciate the testimony that was here today. Representative Olson, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Renew my motion to have this bill laid over.
The bill is laid over. House File 2605 is laid over. Next, we have House File 3541, Representative Durand. I will move House File 3541 for you to the General Register. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill, introduce yourself, tell us why this is such a great bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for having me today, and let me introduce House File 3541 today. 3541 actually clarifies some of the duties of the State Patrol in regards to the safety of us and the campus security and what their role is, and then clarifying some of the trainings that they need to have to make sure that we are safe here on the Capitol. This is a good bill, kind of a clarification bill, letting everybody know some of the issues that are going on within the safety within the Capitol. It wasn't quite clear on the jurisdiction of the State Patrol at the time, so it was mainly just a clarification that we needed to make sure that we put in I guess, black and white, so we have no ambiguity within the statute. So that's the bill. I will take any questions.
What other committee stops did this bill go through?
Public safety.
Public safety?
Yes.
And then it was referred here?
Yes.
Okay, and we're sending it to the General Register. Members, any questions? You're just looking at me. I didn't know. I didn't have a list. Representative Green, thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. And thank you, Representative, for bringing the bill forward. I just have two questions out of curiosity and just to get a better understanding. One is, in here we talk about crimes that happen on state-owned buildings. Where does, like, things that happen online fall? Because, and I don't know if that is that might be a bigger question than for this bill, but like I know it's just this murky area where you could have something online and maybe I'm in the parking lot driving away and something, I receive a message. Like that part would love to know if you have any thoughts on that. It's not a trick question. I really am just super curious and where that jurisdiction lays.
Thank you for the question. Representative Durand, do you have a response?
I can. It is going to be a jurisdictional problem to figure out where that actually crime occurred. And since it might be in regards to your job duties here, that could fall under the purview of the State Patrol and then possibly the BCA if it needed to go further than that. So I would definitely start with the State Patrol here, just because if it's in regards to your safety here, that would be something that these guys would want to know about, and it helped start the process. So,
Representative Green, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you. It is interesting. I know it can get a little bit murky, and so I appreciate you talking about the jurisdiction. And then my only other question was, in here you talk about the very last, between 210 and 215, about another law enforcement agency may assume responsibility. I assume that would, since we're talking about the Capitol complex, that would be the St. Paul Police Department, right? I would assume that would be that agency. And my question is, what are conversations that you've had with them, and what is their feedback on this bill?
Representative Durand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've had actually conversations with Ramsey County Sheriff and St. Paul Police Department as well. And they had some concerns about this just because of the fact that they were concerned that this bill would actually stop them from coming on here and actually assisting the State Patrol with the safety of everybody here. And this bill does not do that. It actually allows the State Patrol to actually use them as a partner if they need be. So this does not affect the relationship. It should not affect the relationship. It just says that they have, they start the process of any investigative crime or criminal behavior that is actually happening on campus here. And then if they need help, they can call, and but they are the primary.
Go ahead. We have some time. Thank you, Representative Green.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you. So, okay, so I just have a quick question then. So if I were to call 911, if I was in a situation where there's a crime happening, it's going to the St. Paul Police Department, I would think, not Capitol Police first. So I guess I'm just trying to understand, like, when that passover happens and what that collaboration, because I just want to make sure that the St. Paul Police are in support of this.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part. You want to make
I just want to make sure the St. Paul Police Department is in support of this, and that that has been kind of figured out on who, where that jurisdiction is. I do also appreciate that it is complicated. So,
yeah, and we had your bill yesterday, so I appreciate your interest. Representative Duran.
Yes, it actually falls back on when you call 911, it goes to that 911 dispatch center, would then they would notify State Patrol or St. Paul Police Department. So depending on where it is and what's happening, they would probably notify State Patrol first. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Luger Nikolai.
Just quickly following up on that. So if they, if there was a need, they have to agree in writing to transfer responsibility for an investigation. So if they were unable to assume responsibility for a call, but had not agreed in writing with St. Paul to, for St. Paul to handle such a call, would that, then what would happen? Who would answer that 911 call?
Representative Duran.
That would only be in cases for situations that they would not be able to handle themselves. State Patrol is limited in the capabilities of some of the things because they don't have the resources maybe the BCA or St. Paul or the Ramsey County has. So they would need to have some sort of an agreement with working with those guys, especially on cases just because of the fact of the evidence being transferred over. So.
Yeah, the reason I ask is just that I think we're still talking about there's two situations. One is a, you know, an ongoing investigation. The other is potentially emergency response. And I don't see them distinguished in this language. And so if there was a resource issue and it had to get passed over to either Ramsey County or St. Paul, in the absence of an agreement in writing, they would not be able to do that under this language. Isn't that right?
Representative Graham?
No, that's not the case.
Okay. Can you tell me more about that? Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. Representative Duran, elaborate a little, I think.
Absolutely. So there is, like I said before, there are certain limitations. Now, if there's an active criminal investigation or a bad thing that happens here, they're going to send everybody. So St. Paul, Ramsey, anybody, you know, they're going to, all cops are going to show up. So it just becomes the fact that these guys are the lead. So the State Patrol is the lead investigator for criminal behavior that happens on campus right now. Okay. If there's something that needs to be transferred, like a bigger case that happens that needs to be, more elaborate than what their capabilities are, then that is where they would have to have, that agreement to transfer that case over to, either BCA, Ramsey County, or, St. Paul Police Department. So, It's not stopping anybody from cooperating at all with the State Patrol on campus. It's just clarifying that they're the lead investigator at the time until they can't handle the case, and then they could push it over.
Thank you. I appreciate your background. That's why you're the author on this bill, because of your non-legislative background and career in law enforcement. Any other questions, members? Okay, I will renew the motion for House File 3541 to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes to House File 3541 to the General Register.
Thank you.
Next, before we go to the two of the chair's bills, I'm going to move to reconsider House File 3901. Representative Kraft is the author. Oh, I'm sorry. 3908. I can't read my own writing sometimes. you can do it from there if you want to go to the front. So House File 3908 is before us. I will move that bill to the judiciary. And Representative Kraft, you have an oral amendment, I believe. Okay, Mr. Burroughs will walk us through this, I believe. I got ahead of ourselves, members. We're going to have a vote on to reconsider House File 3908. Any discussion? Otherwise, all those in favor of House File 3908 to be reconsidered, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The House File 3908 is in front of us. And we will entertain the oral amendment, the Kraft Amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, for the oral amendment, I have page 2, delete section 3.
Do you want to explain the amendment, Representative Kraft, or any other committee member questions?
Yeah, the amendment is, microphone on, sorry. Yeah, the amendment is removing an area that was changing a period from 10 to 20 years. I was able to look into that last night with the help of House research and unwind it a bit, and it's acceptable to do that, and I believe that was something that you were interested in, Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. That was one of the sticking points of the bill yesterday when it was before the committee. I appreciate and support the oral amendment. Any member questions? Representative Scraba.
Could you explain what it was?
Representative Kraft just did. There was a section in there that
it said 10 to 20. Is it back to 10?
Yes, we're striking that so it remains current law, and this is for the, what do we call it, the B license?
Mr. Chair, yeah, the B card is a type of license that the department had historically issued largely prior to Ignition Airlock as a program.
Thank you. Any other member comments or Representative Kraft?
I appreciate support on the amendment.
Okay, all those in favor of the Kraft oral amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Any other discussion on House File 3908? Otherwise, I will renew the motion, or Representative Kraft, if you want to do it, it doesn't matter.
Thanks. I'd move 3908 to Judiciary.
All those in favor of 3908 to Judiciary signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion is adopted. House File 3908 is going to the Judiciary. I will now pass the gavel to, I'll take up one bill. No, I can just, let's take up House File 3513. I'll just do it from here. Chair Olson, I'll give you the gavel.
All right, Mr. Chair, House File 3513 is in front of us. Please begin your testimony.
Thank you very much, members. House File 3513 is the automated vehicles bill that we've been working on in committee. Previously, there was a DE2 amendment to kind of encompass a lot of the comments that we had from committee members working with the department's task force on connected autonomous vehicles. And so we did the DE amendment to address a lot of those concerns. 1 second. Okay. There is another amendment that I will move, quoted DE2. And if I just could, just because it just got handed to me, Mr. Burris, is this the amendment that encompasses the other two costs of being from the special revenue fund and that the department would do the study part internally?
Mr. Chair and members, the DE2 amendment is what the committee had adopted the last time House File 3513 was before the committee. It doesn't include two other amendments, the A21 and the A22, which both dealt with some of the fiscal implications and would amend the DE2.
Thank you for that, since it's not in my packet. Mr. Chair, I would move the other two amendments. I don't remember what they're coded. That were technically still in front of the committee. Is that correct?
Mr. Burris, is that correct?
Mr. Chair and members, my understanding at this point is that House File 3513 is before the committee. Nothing prevents a member moving an amendment. Obviously, there are committee rules, and chairs can choose to, at their discretion, waive those. What had been distributed to the committee previously, if I recall correctly, in members' packets, the last time that the bill was before the committee included the H3513 A21 and H3513 A22 amendments.
Those Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, those are the two, Mr. Burris, those are the two amendments that dealt with the cost of the bill.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Koznick, yes. The first of those, the A21, had a couple of kind of technical clarifying cleanup items, and then established that the Commissioner of Transportation would have to use existing resources for the study. That was one of the additions in the DE2. And then the A22 amendment made or makes an appropriation from the Driver and Vehicle Services operating account to the Commissioner of Commerce for some of the commerce-related costs that are also in the DE2 amendment, and has a corresponding conforming change on the effective date.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, in discussing with the co-chair, they're not in a position to accept those two, which I would consider just author's amendments to for the funds. If you want to discuss it,
Chair,
you don't have to bring it up.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. When we discussed this earlier, I thought you were just referring to the DE2 amendment. I didn't realize you were referring to other amendments from previous. And so without having those in front of us and without knowing exactly what they say, I'd appreciate if we did not accept those or move those today.
Yeah, Chair Koznick.
Thank you. And that's fine for today, I guess. I think we omitted from including that in the member packets, apparently. So that's on us as well. So then, Mr. Chair, I would move the DE2 amendment. As I said, encompassed a lot of the concerns, not all, but it is a work in progress. So I would move the DE2 amendment.
Chair Koznick moves the DE2 amendment. Any discussion? Representative Sensenmayer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question. So the fiscal note that we have in the packet, is the fiscal note for the DE2, or is it for the original language of the bill?
I assume that's to Mr. Lee. Can you answer that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Sensenmayer, the fiscal note is to the bill as introduced.
Thank you.
Sensenmayer, you good? Perfect. All right. All those in favor?
Mr. Chair, actually, the DE2 was adopted in the previous
that's right.
Previous committee. So then I would just move House File 3513 as amended there is a clone of the bill in Commerce Committee for them to discuss the insurance parts of that. We're looking to get a hearing on that. It's been sitting there for a bit. And then this, we would send to Public Safety to discuss the first responder plan within the bill. And so that would be my motion to move this to Public Safety. I would request the roll call.
Chair Koznick has a motion to move this to Public Safety. Any discussion? Chair Tabke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Chair Koznick. I appreciate what you're doing in getting DE2 and incorporating a couple of our smaller requests on this, the AV bill as this moves forward. And so as we've discussed and need to continue having substantive conversations, this bill, in my opinion, cannot leave transportation until we have set up an intermediate step in the transportation world and in our statutes that is an intermediate step from where we're at today to where the autonomous vehicles need to go into the future. It's not that we are standing in the way of doing this, not that we want, many of us at least want to have a bill moving forward that regulates and understands what this new future looks like. I don't think it's something that we should flip a switch on. I don't think it's something that we should just jump headfirst into. I think it's something that we need to understand better what will happen with everything. We need to know if, like within Representative Jones' bill yesterday, within vehicles in bus lanes and that kind of thing, who's held accountable for those kinds of things? When an accident happens, how do all these things report and work well together? And we think that we have a plan that we'll be hearing on Monday. that better gets at those things and are very willing to update that and accept amendments and work together to get something going forward on that. But this bill, as it is, simply doesn't incorporate what we need for an intermediate step that has someone in the vehicle in order to make sure that protect, at least for some point in time, making sure that self-certification is not part of the bill, so that we're handling that, and also a significant amount of reporting so that we as legislators know what can what is happening with AVs as we move forward on this. Like, I appreciate having a couple of, again, those smaller items included in the DE2 amendment, but this is not something that we want to stand in the way of progress and in the way of technology being adopted. We just want to make sure that we're keeping Minnesotans safe. We want to make sure that we are not putting additional stress on our roadways, making sure that this works for Minnesota, and we think there needs to be an intermediate step between here and moving forward and between here and just fully autonomous vehicles running everywhere in the state of Minnesota. And so I think that that's a reasonable, understandable expectation of safety and how we can move this forward. So at this point, we continue to oppose House File 3513 until we can have those things and have substantive discussions. And I wish as well that we had brought some amendments for this today, so I apologize for that. But with the confusion as to where the minutes were and what was happening with this bill as it was moving forward from yesterday, it just wasn't possible at this time. So I continue conversations on this bill and where we can move forward with autonomous vehicles in Minnesota.
Final thoughts, Chair Kosnick?
Thank you. We're not quite ready for final thoughts, but, you know, part of this is part of the process, so I understand that. We have worked, as I mentioned, spent many hours working with industry, working with the department, working with the task force, encompassing members' concerns, walking through the bill previously with Co-Chair Tabke. You know, things move rapidly, so trying to find that, you know, time to sit down and, you know, it's not an end of session negotiation. But, Mr. Chair, we've got the department here. If I was hoping if the department would share any concerns that they have with the DE2 or general, if there's comfort with it, and let us know where the department may land or what other concerns we should continue to address.
Perfect. Please state your name for the record and answer the question, please.
Thank you, Chair and Representatives. Thomas Johnson Kaiser with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, Acting CAV Director, so connected non-made vehicles. So, yes, Chair Kosnick, we have, as a department, had discussions regarding the bill and the DE2 amendment, working on addressing some of those concerns that Commissioner Dobenberger expressed in her testimony previously. And I would say the DE2 amendment does better align with the Governor's Council's recommendations. There still are some differences in the recommendations compared to the DE2 amendment, but it does move in a direction that better aligns with the council's recommendations.
Mr. Chair.
Great, thank you. And then I guess I would just kind of wrap up, you know, for the committee to better understand and the public that's very interested. Some of the things that we did with that is encompassed introducing a weight limit of 10,000 pounds so that the intent of this bill is to permit passenger type vehicles to get assist in our transit needs and systems, and not, you know, 80,000 pound 18 wheelers. I don't know that the public is there, and that's not really the intent of this bill that we need to do today. So compromised with that weight limit. We talked a lot about the accessible vehicle, wheelchair accessible vehicles was talked about, you know, on electronic vehicles. Having a wheelchair accessible isn't always even possible. And so to incorporate that in here, you know, literally isn't possible, but we have accessible vehicle partners and referrals as part of that to take on. Then we also had an amendment that wanted a licensed driver to help with the online support systems, and so that's incorporated in the bill. We do have a study that we talked about in the other amendments to discuss a lot of the impacts about labor, congestion, and some of that those items, safety and crash rates. And then also we did address MnDOT's permitting. The self-certification is also in here. Maybe that's something we still need to clarify a little bit than that, but there is the ability for third-party testing, and we can continue to refine that. My opinion is that shouldn't hold up this bill from going to public safety. It shouldn't hold up the Commerce Committee from talking about the insurance needs. I know that in the other body there are other bills that are being introduced that are heavily regulated, and unfortunately I think when you are overly heavily regulated, even to the point of including a driver in a driverless vehicle, those types of regulations are too burdensome and will stifle the innovation that this technology promises and the potential that for safer roads, to build our economy out even more, for reliable transportation. And so I have concerns with some of the other bills that are calendared in this committee, but then also that are being heard in the Senate. But I appreciate that they're at least laying out a number of different options. I think they're a couple weeks late into the session to get going, but that's fine. Are we on closing here, or are we taking more member comments?
Mr. Chair, I do have two people who would like to make comments.
Okay, well, I'll just point, I wanted to point out those compromises and more are in the DE2 amendment that has been adopted. So I appreciate that. So we have a base to work off of. I'll have some other comments before we close.
Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Koznick. You know, I do appreciate the, I saw you took the amendment around making sure that someone who is, I think 5.20, you know, ensuring that someone who is supporting the vehicle is located in the United States. I think that was something that we had asked for. I also know that I had the advocates for the blind community come and speak to me about making sure that, you know, they were excited about the potential for accessibility with Waymo, but wanted to make sure that the interface was something that they would be able to utilize. And so I appreciate you. I see that in the bill at 10.24, so I appreciate that. I have one question about 9.25. So I know a concern that Representative Jones has brought up is seeing, and I think we're already seeing this in Minneapolis, Waymo's kind of idling around, right? And so I think I've heard, you know, in an ideal world, we could get to the point where many people don't have cars, they're just taking Waymos, and so a Waymo is doing a ride at all times. It's basically kind of never stopping. I don't know how long it would take for us to get there, and I think there's a real concern about just adding traffic and congestions onto our road, and so seeing Waymos that are maybe in bus lanes or parked or just kind of idling. So in 9.25, it says, must not park unlawfully on any roadway or shoulder for a time longer than is reasonably necessary. I guess I worry that that means that they're just going to be idling around if they're not picking someone up. So can you kind of speak to the intention there and if that has come up in any of the conversations that you've had with stakeholders?
Chair Koznick, I don't think electric vehicles idle very well, but the answer's to you.
thank you for the question. And this is part of the process. These are electric vehicles for most industry that, you know, because of the automated systems, they're also using electric vehicles. And so a lot of the idling, if the concern is about gas emissions and such, would not be a factor. But in terms of congestion, which I think is what you're driving towards, I would say that there are a lot of other transportation network drivers that are parked on the sides of the roads and this and that equally. I don't know that there's evidence that this would be significantly greater or more, and probably because of the automated system, I can't speak for industry, but they're generally not going to just park on the side of the road and sit there. And in terms of current practice with some of the industry is, as I understand, they're mapping the different streets and stuff. They're not in active commercial mode. But we can continue to address it, that, you know, to a more satisfactory answer, but that's to my knowledge. But we can continue to discuss it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, idling probably isn't the right word. I don't know what the right word is for Waymo's just driving or sitting around. I guess, you know, we're going to continue this conversation. I think we're going to hear kind of a different approach to this on Monday. You know, I guess I just think that when we say, you know, if we don't give this industry everything they want, they're not going to come. I find that a little disingenuous. They're already here. I, you know, on December 1st got an email from Waymo that said we're in Minneapolis. So it seems like they are invested in coming to this area. And so I would hope that if they are invested, they're willing to work with us. And I think I just I get a little tired at the legislature of kind of the constant refrain of, like, if we don't give this businesses everything they ask for, that they're going to leave. And I don't appreciate kind of being held hostage in that way by industry. So thank you.
Final comments from Representative Luger Nicolai.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. One of the, I also want to express my appreciation for the addition of the language on at, page 14 of the DE, the effect on human drivers and the inclusion of various stakeholders in the studies. But one of the things I just want to express my concern about is that we kind of know what the effect is going to be. We may not know what the magnitude of that effect is going to be, but so far much of this conversation has been already about the, you know, replacing human drivers already in the transportation networks. And so I think we just had a bill where we talked about revenue sharing with individuals who felt like some of their work had been displaced by electronic replacements. And I think that is going to be the next place this conversation needs to go, which is how do we ensure that the impact on humans who are currently doing this work, that we have a backup plan for supporting those individuals if their work goes away.
Thank you for those comments. Mr. Chair, we are now on final comments from you.
Thank you, and I appreciate the discussion in the committee. In terms of the jobs, looking at a report that I had here from Arizona, the automated vehicle technology can optimize shipping routes and minimize accident-related costs and delays. This would translate into savings for consumers and auto industry employees, millions of Americans across the country, and that will continue to grow with new technology. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce estimates that motor vehicles and parts manufacturers and dealers employ nearly 3 million individuals. Over time, as automated vehicle adoption rates increase, many of these jobs will shift towards more highly paid, highly technical jobs related to creating and maintaining the systems that operate autonomous vehicles. And the opening hearing, we had a gentleman from the Minnesota Higher Education, the Center for Automotive Excellence. I should reach out to him and ask for his written testimony, but they reached out to me way in the interim, unrelated to automated vehicles, but the work that they do to educate students and retrain adults in automotive services, they're very forefront leading on the electric vehicles. They're excited about autonomous vehicles and the different skill sets and training that will be necessary to work on these vehicles. And so this is where I think there's an opportunity for jobs. If people in transportation network provider drivers are concerned, this is an opportunity that I think we can partner, and we should hope that there's a higher level of achievement, and we just need to help train the workforce there. I know Senator Dibble addresses it maybe a little bit more forward in his bill through some deed grants and such, something we'll obviously discuss. But I think what we are sometimes failing to recognize is that there are a lot of job potentials. The economy is always changing and evolving. This is no different, but it should be more exciting because we want people to utilize their highest maximum potential, and I think there's opportunities to do that. You know, appreciate the drivers that are around and take us where we need to go, and the on-demand and the independent contractor status of that for many of them. Sometimes it's a second job. But with this technology, I think that there is just a potential for higher paying, more high potential employment, and the state should embrace that. And we should partner with that in terms of the workforce, and we'll continue to work on that. Then the last thing, I would just kind of along with that, with the mid, there was a letter in the original packet that I'll repeat. This is from the CEO of Minnesota Technology Association. A growing autonomous or automated vehicle, which is the new term in the DE, automated. A growing automated vehicle sector brings with it jobs in engineering, operations, and maintenance, and signals to companies and adjacent industries that Minnesota is a place where emerging technology can thrive to scale. And so, members, we will ask for a roll call on this because I think there's been a lot of work done. The vote is to send it to other legislators to talk about other parts of the bill that is under their jurisdiction in that committee. This is not the bill that's going to the floor. It's not sending the bill to the floor vote. It is telling Minnesotans and industry that Minnesota wants to have be on the cutting edge of technology that will transform transportation. We're seeing it in other parts of the country, and we've seen it for a long time. This is new to us maybe in Minnesota, but it's not brand new technology. It's been employed in many, many cases. MnDOT has been studying this for a long time with their Connected and Autonomous Vehicle Task Force. And so I think Minnesota's ready. The technology's there. Industry's here asking for some guidelines so that they can make solid investments. Minnesotans want the technology because they've tried it in other states. And I don't think that we should stifle that innovation. And so, members, I would renew my motion to send the bill, House File 3513, to the Public Safety Committee.
Chair Kosnick renews his motion to send House File 3513 to the Public Safety Committee. Mr. Baker, please take the roll.
Mr. Chair, as amended.
As amended. Thank you.
Chair Kosnick?
Aye.
Chair Tapke?
No.
Vice Chair Myers?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ream?
No.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Fogelman?
Yes.
Representative Green?
No.
Representative Jones?
Jones, no.
Representative Joy?
Yes.
Representative Cagle? Representative Kraft?
No.
Representative Luker-Nicolai?
No.
Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Sensormura?
No.
Representative Scraba?
Yes.
There being 8 yeas and 7 nays, the motion does not prevail. Mr. Chair, would you like to bring your next bill up?
We will. Let's find the right packet here. What is the
House File 4102.
We have a couple testifiers. Maybe they can make their way to the testifier. I'll just stay here for sake of expediency.
So the motion for this will be to Ways and Means. Mr. Chair, would you like to move your bill?
That was our intended motion. Half the committee has some heartburn on the bill, and so we don't anticipate that it has the votes to pass out of committee, and so we will just lay the bill over. Is that correct?
Just lay the bill over, not on the table, Chair Tapke?
Chair Olson, you can do what you'd like with that. Either works for me. Do you want me to speak to that now, or do you want me to wait?
You can speak to it, Chair Tapke.
Thank you. Really appreciate everybody bringing this bill. This is something I've been working on my entire time in the legislature with Mr. Ledoux. And this bill, as presented today, undoes some things that were previous agreements and has some problematic pieces in it that I would like some more time to work through. So I just appreciate Chair Kosnick laying this over. There are things in here that absolutely can and should get done with this, but we're going to lay it over to continue working on it and get a bill that we can pass.
Chair Kosnick.
Yeah, we appreciate the comments, and that is where we're at. So thank you. Part of the blessing of a tied legislature. But just to introduce the bill, so we kind of got a little out of order, I want to thank the testifiers that are here, to the committee members and the public. House File 4102 is a bill that allows the Office of the Legislative Auditor to continue the salary survey for state law enforcement officers, which is due to sunset. There are two more studies scheduled on the books, and it's critical. It's a critical recruitment and retention to extend the reports, which are incredibly valuable to our statewide or state troopers and law enforcement. And what the surveys do is it provides objective data comparing state patrol compensation with larger municipal enforcement agencies, including those in the metropolitan areas and the cities of the first class, those over 100,000 population. And the survey data is also used to fairly help set compensation for state law enforcement officers across the agency, including the BCA agents, conservation officers, and members of the Department of Corrections and fugitive apprehension units. There is two testifiers. I appreciate the work that Representative Tapke has done in the past. I think this is important to continue to have this, and we're not going to pass it today. Maybe we will by the end of session, I hope. But in my district, members, I have a number of law enforcement state troopers. I don't know the exact percentage, but it's one of the higher districts that has law enforcement in it. And one of our testifiers also happens to now be is a state trooper, and I don't remember your title, president of the troopers or something. He'll introduce himself, but so I'm honored to carry this and support this. I think it's an important, unfortunately, a necessary tool for state troopers as they work through their setting up their compensation contracts. And so, Mr. Chair, I'd turn it over to the testifiers and then committee for questions.
Thank you so much. Mr. Liddell, would you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Ledoux. I am the Director of Legislative Affairs for Law Enforcement Labor Services, and I served as a Minnesota State Patrol Trooper for 31 years. Thank you, Chair Kosnick, Chair Tapke, for your leadership on this issue. I'm here on behalf of Law Enforcement Labor Services and its member organizations with the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association, representing more than 8,800 law enforcement officers and public safety professionals across Minnesota. We support House File 4102. This matters because state troopers play a critical role in public safety. They patrol our highways, they respond to serious crashes, they assist local agencies, and help keep people in commerce moving safely across the state. More broadly, state law enforcement officers provide safety, security, and service to communities throughout Minnesota. Maintaining a clear and consistent survey process, which supports a fair data-driven approach to compensation. It helps address disparities. It ensures state law enforcement compensations remain competitive with comparable agencies. These decisions also have long-term impacts, as retirement benefits are tied to an officer's earnings over the course of their career. State law enforcement officers are not average, so I don't believe it's unreasonable to at least compensate them for the duties and responsibilities of the position at a rate that at least is average. In the packets today, we provided a list. It's the comparison group, which was established by the legislature. Counting the State Patrol, there's 34 agencies on that list. Unfortunately, at the present moment, the State Patrol falls at 34 out of 35. I respectfully urge your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony. To the next testifier, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair Kosdek, Chair Tapke, and members. My name is Jason Teal. I have the honor and privilege of being president of the Troopers Association. I'm here today to talk about the chaplain bill. We need some language in 299D, similar to DNR's language that they already have. The chaplain program, it's Minnesota State Patrol chaplain program, provides critical emotional and spiritual support to troopers and their families during the most difficult times. Chaplains are used during MRT callouts, when an active member passes away, critical incidents. They also help us on fatalities. They'll come do the death notification with us, things like that, to navigate the immediate grief and trauma to those family members. This is an all-volunteer program. Chaplains are not paid a salary or an hourly wage. The request is limited strictly to reimbursement for necessary expenses like lodging, meals, hotels, stuff like that. The State Patrol has committed to absorbing these costs within their existing operational budget. There will be no additional cost to have this. Troopers consistently report a strong positive feedback about the chaplain program. Chaplains provide a level of support that peers and supervisors often cannot, especially during a crisis or a grief situation. This supports the contributions of mental wellness, resilience, and recovery after traumatic events. A program like this lets troopers know that the agency cares about them well past the day it happened. They support plays a meaningful role in retention in a profession that faces increasing stress and recruitment challenges. Chaplains help command staff and peers focus on the operational responsibility during these critical incidents. They provide immediate trusted support without adding cost. With that, I'll take any questions on it.
Thank you so much for your testimony. The next testifier we have is Judy Randall. If you'd please make your way up to the table and begin your testimony.
And Mr. Chair, there were two amendments, so we'll just bring them up. It'll be fine. We'll add those and then lay the bill over.
Sounds good, Mr. Chair. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, Judy Randall, Legislative Auditor. I'm just here to answer questions. I don't have any testimony I need to provide.
Perfect. Does anyone have any questions for the auditor?
I would move we'll move the amendments, just explain them real briefly, and then if members have questions, that's why Ms. Randall's here. And in regards to the amendment, which affects the fiscal note.
Perfect. Chair Kosnick moves the A1 amendment.
I do move the A1 amendment as Mr. Teal, Trooper Teal, or you probably have a higher rank than that, don't you?
Trooper's good.
Sorry. Talked about the chaplain service, so the A1 amendment allows them to reimburse chaplains for some of the work that they do. So members, I would urge a support of the A1 amendment.
Any discussion? Chair Tapke?
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just have, in rereading through this language, which I'd seen once, I just have a question about line 1.5 on here. So the commissioner or the chief supervisor of the State Patrol may recruit, train, and accept. And then I've got a question about without regard to personnel laws or rules, how that seems like it's a much larger impact than what I had originally thought this was. So without regard to personnel laws or rules, is that?
Chair Kosnick, can you answer that? Or can we give it to one of the testifiers?
If either the testifiers or anybody else in the audience wants to comment on that, that would be great.
Mr. Teal?
Chair Kosnick, Chair Tapke, this language was given to me by CHQ, and I think what that means is just that as it stands right now in 299D, that they cannot reimburse our chaplains for anything because they don't have an employee ID number, and it is against the law right now to reimburse them. So they're looking to add language. So all they're able to do is just reimburse them with no additional costs.
Chair Tapke.
Thank you, Chair Olson. So is that the question that comes up is if personnel laws are completely without regard in this instance, like what if there is misconduct, and obviously not saying or hoping that there will be or anything like that, but what if there were to be misconduct by chaplains, what would happen? What would happen there if we are without regard to personnel laws or rules?
Mr. Teal?
Chair Tapke, I could answer that question for you if you'd like.
Please do.
I believe, again, as was stated, the language came from admin from the State Patrol. I believe it's because they are not employees. They're essentially volunteers. Obviously, at any moment, should there be any form of misconduct, the colonel of the State Patrol or the commissioner of public safety could advise them their services are no longer needed. That, I believe, is why those particular rules don't apply to them, because they are not employees. They are volunteers. The intent, as was stated, is if they travel 100 miles to a death notification to assist the trooper, that the agency, if they deem appropriate, have the ability to provide them with reimbursement for mileage.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. I appreciate that. So, yeah, I am slightly uncomfortable with that little clause in there, but we can adopt this and we can continue to look at it, and Edward's laying over. And so just note that as we continue to discuss this and bring it back up, we'll want to make sure we fully understand what the ramifications of that are. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Seeing all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Chair Kosnick, on to the A2 amendment. He offers the A2 amendment.
The A2 amendment is a little bit technical. Mr. Burris, if maybe you could help me out a little bit on that, but I believe it has to do with helping with the fiscal note. It eliminates the benefits from the study and focuses on just the compensation, so it drives down the fiscal note. And maybe that, Ms. Randall, if you want to affirm or have any other additional comments for the committee, that would be great.
Mr. Burris or Ms. Randall? Ms. Randall. Mr. Burris, it's you.
Mr. Chair and members, as you noted, under current law, the salary study is designed to address both compensation and benefits. The amendment would remove the benefits side of the analysis when the Office of the Legislative Auditor performs each study.
Ms. Randall, anything to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. That is the effect of the amendment, is that it removes the benefit consideration from the work required of OLA. The difference is a lot of work, and so it is a way to have our fiscal note be zero without the benefits. With the benefits, we do have a fiscal note attached, because the benefits are like comparing, I've been saying, it's like comparing apples to celery to unicorns to buses, right? It's not even the same category. It's not fruit. And so it requires a lot more time and a lot of work from our staff to conduct the salary study and survey and report if we include benefits.
Any further discussion? See it. Representative Luger-Nicolai.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I am a little concerned about that this is not necessarily technical and that it has a pretty substantial substantive effect on what we're evaluating comparatively. And it's the kind of effect that employees who are choosing between these types of jobs, they make those comparisons all the time. That's why we're talking about this as a question relating to recruitment. And so whether or not benefits are comparable, types of benefits are comparable, the composition of benefit packages are, I think, is relevant to whether or not we are making a broad salary study. So this kind of concerns me that we're slicing out a pretty significant portion of a total compensation analysis.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I was going to say pretty similar thing. I mean, in compensation packages, I get that it's difficult to do, and I'm not arguing that, but health care, all this is becoming a huge portion. We've had other bills and other concerns in other committees where people aren't getting raises because of health care costs. So, like, it's such a significant portion. I don't know. I get that it's costly to do, but if you don't do it, then the data isn't accurate. So then what do we, that would be my concern.
All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please signify by saying aye. Any opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Division being called. Representative Tabke did vote for it. Would you still like your division? Okay. Division has been withdrawn. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Chair Tabke, would you like to discuss your bill any further?
My name is Chair Kosnick.
Chair Kosnick. Your name is Chair Kosnick. Would you like to discuss your bill?
Hey, my hair
Chair
is Tabke, thinning. I
Chair
know,
Tabke, but would you like to discuss Chair Kosnick's bill any further? All right. On to the author of the bill, Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for hearing this. Thank you to our state troopers for the work that you do. Don't take this bill and not being able to pass out of committee in any way a reflection of our appreciation for your work. We have a lot of bills here this session as things have changed, and it's our state troopers that provide almost certainly our protection here at the Capitol to make sure that we're able to do the work and also in our communities. I think this bill is important. I supported it when it was initially passed. I have, like I said, a number of troopers in my district, and I constantly have heard from their spouses and themselves of the challenges of not being turning down recruiting efforts from other larger departments that may have the ability to pay them more and offer different types of work that may or may not be safer. And it's an important work that they do, and I think this study helps our Trooper Association fairly helps them to fairly argue for their fair compensation among law enforcement and be advocates for their troopers. So this isn't really important. We are laying it over, unfortunately. I hope that as advocates for it, the concerns that Representative Tabke or others may have can be alleviated and smoothed out, and we can pass it in one of the next week sometime. So let us know, but we'll just lay the bill over then. Thank you. Oh, Chair Tabke, go ahead.
So Chair Tabke does have a comment on the bill.
I remembered something I just want to add to this, and Mr. Ledoux knows this very, very well, but this is the reason why I worked on this bill so much was because this was one of the things that Melissa Hortman cared about deeply, was making sure that troopers were taken care of in the state of Minnesota and that we were doing this in the right way. So this and carrying on in her name and her tradition, I absolutely want to find a way to get this figured out so we can continue this work together. So thank you.
And with that, House File 4102 is laid over. And we give the chair back to Chair Kosny.
Chair Kosnick, what in the world?
Well, thank you, members, for the time. We actually have even about 10 minutes left. So thank you for being expeditious. I don't think there's any other work on the agenda. We'll continue to work on these bills. It is work in progress, and this is the way policy work goes. You don't always pass, and that's sometimes okay, but I hope that we can continue to work on the important priorities that we seem to have but aren't able to get it out of committee. So thank you very much, members, and enjoy your extra 10 minutes. The meeting is adjourned.